Down to Business on Newstalk.
Thanks to Bank of Ireland, helping you deal with the business of Brexit.
Now, this year's budget was like no other as the government sought to tackle the uncertainties of both COVID and Brexit. As the dust settles on the government's €18 billion plan, did they get it right? And what should be their focus for the coming year? Delighted to be joined this morning by two independent economists, Jim Power and Moore MacDougall. Gentlemen, you're very welcome to the programme, both of you.
Pleasure to be here.
Thank you, Bobby.
Now, Jim, we might start with you. The budget, it's funny the way the budgets come, but there seems to be little or no furore over this budget. I thought the opposition attack on it was very mute. I don't know what you think, but that's why I'm here to ask you. Is it all forgotten about, given we're talking such colossal sums here?
Okay, Bobby, I think it's interesting. In the general election there in February and in recent times, there's been a growing political consensus that budgetary policy here should be sort of two-thirds expenditure and one-third taxation. And that has become the sort of accepted consensus out there at the convention. And the budget on Tuesday was £17.7 billion package, £17.4 billion was expenditure and £270 million in taxation measures. So it was just unambiguously a spending budget. And I think the reason why it proved so difficult for the opposition to criticise it and indeed why there's been no furore about it is that I think there's just a general acceptance that that sort of very counter-cyclical fiscal approach was absolutely essential in the current environment, because at the end of the day, we know what the economy has been going through for the last 6 months, at least certain sectors. We know what the future is kind of going to look like with another level 5 lockdown looking imminent. So against that sort of backdrop, I think there's an acceptance that it is essential to step in and support businesses and support households to make sure that once we come out the other end of this, there is a functioning economy and, more importantly, that there is a functioning Irish society. So okay, I think that's why there's been such a lack of furore about this.
Okay, and I think that's very well said. And just before I bring in Moore MacDougall, can I also ask you, the bond markets, Jim, seem almost unconcerned. Like, they're normally the barometer of whether you can borrow or how much you can borrow, but they seem to be almost happy with this.
Well, since March, the EU has relaxed the fiscal rules, which limit budget deficits to 3% of GDP. The EU has relaxed state aid rules. And more importantly, monetary policy has been aimed at bond buying, pushing government bond yields down, making borrowing as cheap as possible for every country in the European Union, which is going to have to borrow a lot of money over the next couple of years. So in a sense, fiscal and monetary policy are hand in glove at the moment. And bond markets are not concerned at the moment, because what's happening in Ireland is happening everywhere.
Okay.
And I think it's important that Ireland's sovereign credibility is quite good following, number one, the fact that we didn't burn the bondholders 10 or 12 years ago, as was the populist cry at the time. And secondly, and very importantly, I think coming into 2020, we had been running a modest surplus of around $1.3 billion.
Okay. Moore, when we hear what Jim says there about the markets, do you share the same optimism that they won't they won't change their mood?
No, I do, with two caveats on that. I'd be interested to hear if Jim agrees with this. As things stand at the moment, we haven't got, if you like, there isn't any euro bond. In other words, the European Union, and the Germans are strongly against this, the European Union is not, if you like, taking on the indebtedness of the member states. And in this sense, and I don't mean to exaggerate too much, but in this sense, we're just another country of the 27 countries, most of whom are engaging in this kind of exercise. And I agree with Jim absolutely as to why it has to be done, why it is being done, and why it has to be done. And I'd be I'm laughing at the way in which the opposition has been snookered by it. But that's an important point here. The EU is buying, the ECB is buying in bonds. So it's the ECB, not the European Union, which is underpinning all this.
Yeah.
Now, the indebtedness, it will be of the Irish state. Now, as long as the Irish state is behaving in a way which is acceptable to the bond market, it's in the same position as other countries, it's doing what other countries are doing, and so on and so forth, then why would the bond markets aren't going to dump on the Irish, on Irish bonds?
Okay.
Now, the problem is that if we continue to do it with this level of borrowing into next year, and then say, okay, and nothing gets sorted next year, and then we have to do it again, or we have a series of lockdowns going into the future, and we say we're going to borrow at any stage to deal with these, that's fine as long as it goes and as long as the bond market feels happy. But the morning that the bond market starts to scratch its head, anybody who wants to buy bonds can buy Finnish bonds, German bonds, French bonds. They won't want to buy Irish bonds if there's any question mark over Irish bonds relative to other bonds.
Okay.
And that's
Jim, if we look at the sort of spiral of debt, it's vital that small businesses, SMEs survive, because if they go bust, you get unemployment, then you get household debt. That leads to economic debt, which leads to another banking crisis. Is that a fair sequence of negative events?
I actually think it is. We had a high level of debt coming into this, okay, about 205 billion, right?
Yeah.
And if the government had not stepped in and lent the support that it lent on Tuesday, I think bond markets would have taken much, much more serious fright at what's happening here, because the consequence of that, in answering your question directly, is that if that sort of support had not been forthcoming on Tuesday, thousands of businesses would fold in the SME sector over the next couple of months. Hundreds of thousands of workers would become permanently long-term unemployed, because a lot of the workers that are most vulnerable are relatively low-skilled, relatively low-paid, so would struggle to get re-employed regardless of what's happening in the economy for the foreseeable future. So that, to me, would be a much worse fiscal crisis for Ireland, and it's one that should justifiably, in my view, scare the living daylights out of bond markets. So I think bond markets are sort of thinking this is the least bad option, because it does prevent households, businesses getting into serious financial difficulty, with debt default then starting to rise and then morphing into a serious banking crisis, which is what happened 2007-2008. And of course, the point also is that the Irish banks were already fragile coming into COVID-19. So they had very little tolerance for any upsurge in bad debts at this juncture. So I think the Irish government is actually playing it sensibly in the circumstances.
Okay.
What we have here is government, because of uncertainty, responding to the immediate requirement to protect the health service. That's really what's driving this. And I'm not saying they're wrong to protect the health service, but that's really what's driving them. But the difficulty is that if nothing happens out there and the disease continues, this is going to continue to be the case.
Yeah.
Now, it reminds me of the old Western films when the unfortunates in the covered wagons had circled the wagons, and the Indians are on the outside, and everybody said, don't worry, don't worry, the cavalry will be here soon. And the cavalry, of course, is the vaccine which is going to come. And if the cavalry doesn't come over the hill, the fellows in the circled wagon are in trouble. Now, we in effect, seem to think that we can do this because at the end we will arrive at a situation in which this kind of intervention will not be necessary. But that really means that we can crush the disease. We can do in New Zealand. I don't think we can. We certainly can't do it on our own. You asked the question, how often can they do this and the damage to the economy? Clearly, if the disease continues to be a threat, if there is no vaccine, and if there is no, if they don't arrive in with a treatment system which basically means that it's just an inconvenient flu. If those things don't happen, then you're asking a question, how often can we have blockages on the economy in order to protect the health system? I don't know the answer to that, but how often you can do it. But it's not a long-term strategy.
Yeah. OK, we'll have to leave it there. Fascinating stuff from both Moore McDougall and Jim Power. I wanted to go into GAA with you, Jim, but we don't have time. But because I know Moore McDougall has huge views on the GAA, so we'll have to talk GAA another day, boys. But thanks for the economic update.
Bye,
thanks
Bobby.
A lot, guys.
Goodbye, Jim.
Cheers.